This is June 22nd, 2006. This is Ellen Nori Nordhauser. I'm interviewing Mr. John Twombly, who was a student at SIUE for the history of SIUE.
Okay.
So I asked how you happened to attend SIUE.
Okay. Well, Ellen, I basically was interested in broadcasting as a career. And the television radio program, as well as the journalism program at SIUE, were well respected in the industry, especially locally in St. Louis. And so, you know, if you opted, for example, not to go to Missouri, which obviously had the nationally renowned journalism school, if you were looking in this area, you would definitely consider SIUE. And in checking with other colleges like Maryville or Lindenwood or UMSL, SIUE definitely had a much stronger program, much more depth of curriculum, more equipment, that sort of thing. Now, this was back in 1984 that I first started, and then I attended through 1987. And frankly, you know, if you talk about Edwardsville, at that time I lived in Florissant, and the only thing I knew about SIU Edwardsville was, you know, they had a great soccer team, and they always had the bronze boot with St. Louis University. And I had heard about the Mississippi River Festival. But other than that, I knew, I had never been at the campus, had never been in Edwardsville. If you asked me to identify where Edwardsville was, you know, I'd have no clue, just as I wouldn't have any clue where Belleville was. I was typical of someone living on the other side
the
of the river.
The other side of the river.
Who, you know, the only reason we'd go into Illinois would probably be to take I-55 to go to Wisconsin for vacation. You know, it really wasn't a place where I normally was. It's pretty ignorant of that.
Oh, that's interesting. So did you commute then during those years?
Actually, I started living at Tower Lake and then rented apartments elsewhere in town, and then met my wife at SIU Edwardsville, and we eventually stayed in Edwardsville and, since we graduated in 87.
Well, that's interesting. So did you major in broadcasting?
I was a double major in what they titled television radio, which was broadcasting. And then I was about to graduate, and then my advisor said that I would be a little more marketable if I took a few more journalism classes instead of just the basic one. And I just felt more competent instead of stumbling on the air. You know, I'm not a great talker, so in writing you can edit everything. That was something. And plus there was a professor at that time who was the journalism program, and he was kind of an institution there.
Yeah, what was his name now?
His name was Bill Ward.
Yeah, Bill Ward.
And I still keep in touch with him to this day.
Does he live in Edwardsville?
No, his wife works for USA Today, and they live in near, what's that? It's in Virginia. It's near Washington, D.C.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
I think he lived on.
Because I've seen a lot of things that he did, like those big photo journal essays.
He had a lot of textbooks. He was, I think, the Associated Press or maybe Rolling Stone or one of those had him listed as one of the top 10 journalism teachers in the nation. I don't know how you quantify that or anything, but he was definitely, one year he did get the SIU annual teaching award. It was like 74 or something like that. They have, I think they still have those all hanging at Albion Center or something.
Right. So, are you a journalist now?
I'm in public relations for, you could say I'm a journalist, but I'm not with a newspaper. I'm in public relations for St. Louis Children's Hospital.
Okay.
And I've been there for about 10 years. And I would definitely say that the experience at SIU Edwardsville was fantastic for my career, because one of the benefits of the university is that it's right smack dab next to a major market. And we have a lot of graduates who are in the St. Louis area. And I do have to say, the job that I had before this one the person who hired me was an SIU graduate in the same program that I was in. A person on that team was an SIU graduate. And then there was another SIU graduate who basically greased the skids for me to get this job that I currently have. And so there's a big advantage to going to a school like SIU that it's a nice balance between getting away, you know, half hour away, but also being near a major market where jobs are available. And I think that's a sizable advantage over perhaps going to a university that's kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
And so I'm grateful that I went to SIU.
Well, I think now public relations is a specialization in speech communication.
That's
Laura,
true.
Laura teaches it. I can't really think of her last name.
And I didn't really, the way Bill Ward taught, I didn't really take PR courses.
Yeah.
He focused on three things, layout and design, photography, and number one, writing. And he really was a staunch advocate of having a lot of required writing courses.
Yes.
And not just your basic who, what, when, where, how, and why, but, you know, looking at style like John McPhee and Gay Talese and all them, and the new journalism. And so it was good preparation, although he was a little eccentric and, you know, like, was not always the easiest to get along with for some people, but I think most graduates are like I am, where they're forever grateful to him for what he taught.
Okay. Well, that's neat.
It was funny because
interesting.
I was interning at a, I had transferred to SIU.
Yes.
And I was at a, like a cable station learning TV production. And there was another person there who had just completed her classes at SIU in the major that I was going to go into. So I was seeking advice. You know, I said,
yes,
I'm going to be signing up, so, you know, who should I avoid and who should I take and all that? And I still remember to this day, she grabbed this business card that was lying on a desk and she wrote on the back of it, "These are the people you don't want to take classes
with." Oh, really?
One was Bill Ward, who I took as many classes as I could from the guy when I was there. The other was Camille Winter, who was
he was in the Czech Republic, the head of all.
So you know all about that.
And
I have to say that of all the television radio teachers that I had, Camille Winter was definitely, you know, the best. He was and as an example. You know, he was kind of unconventional because I still remember the thing he always said was, "Be your own man." And for example, if I was writing a radio script,
yes,
and I said, you know, "Edwardsville rolled over Collinsville," he'd mark that and he says, "Reminds me of a dog," you know. And so he wanted you to get away from the cliche, think
yes
for yourself. And he also advocated that you be very, when you listen and watch the news, be critical, identify shortcomings, watch things like McNeil Lair, read Time and Newsweek, always be very well versed. And his thing that he preached was that he was always employed because he could write and he knew what news was all about. So whether it was radio, TV, newspapers, he was always employed. And I think in a way that I try to carry that.
Well, that's real. No one else has talked about him, so I'm really glad.
Oh, really? I could share more. It's been so long, and you know, I was just taking classes from him, so I wasn't like a close personal friend or something. But I would, from some of the grads that I've talked with, you know, Ward and Winter, Ward and Winter themselves had a very good mutual respect. Paul Shankman, who is on Channel 2, you know, if you were to interview him, he would definitely go on and on and on about both of those individuals, because they were
important grads.
Yeah, and I think it's great that the university early on was getting powerhouse professors like that, because that's what it's all about.
Right. Right. Well, I asked, have your thoughts about the university changed over the years?
That's a good question.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it has. Well, some things have and some things haven't. You know, my initial impression, which you asked about, was just how beautiful that campus is.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, thankfully, it's largely, you know, green space. And,
mm-hmm.
and I liked the way Obata designed mm-hmm. the campus, where you're in the middle of campus and you don't hear all the traffic. You know,
yes.
It's got a nice campus feel to it, even though mm-hmm. it was largely a commuter school at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that serene setting was nice. I liked walking from Tower Lake to, you know, the gym
yes.
or what have you. And it was so tranquil. And I still feel like that to this day. You know, a lot of times I'll purposely park by the Tower Lake pool, even if I'm walking over to the VC to
uh-huh.
work out or something, just to get on the path.
Uh-huh, get on the path.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And is that Norman back there?
Yeah, he probably went out on the back porch. And
he's
watching the rain. And
but in that regard, my impression really hasn't changed. And the other thing is, I think I heard, especially Ward a lot of times, stop.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Good.
Talk about how this campus has so much potential.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of frustrated at the time because there were things going on that he didn't like, leadership-wise, I guess. But,
uh-huh.
you know, the campus always has had a lot of potential. And, mm-hmm. and I know the building that I was in, the communications building,
yes.
was equipped to be a television station,
mm-hmm.
like Channel 9 or something. They used to have on-the-air signs over different doors and stuff. And there was a lot of capability there. So, you know, it was loaded with potential. Well, I think back then when I was going, I had the impression that the university was kind of hung over from MRF. I mean, the mid-80s were not the best time for the university in a lot of people's minds. And a lot of that had to do with the state budget cuts that
mm-hmm.
were happening. And
right.
and then, you know, the Earl Lazarson, Barbara Teeters, Constance
mm-hmm.
Rockingham, in the eyes of a lot of people there, were not popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they felt that they were autocratic or what have
mm-hmm.
you. You know, I wasn't even in student government, so I wasn't
yeah.
exposed to that firsthand,
mm-hmm.
so it's hard for me to sit here and prove anything. But it was definitely a rough time for the university at that point because
mm-hmm.
of the problems it was encountering. Now, I kind of looked up stuff in different articles and things just because I had some feelings about how things were going based on, you know, what my professors were
yes.
telling me and things like that. And it was a lot of it was secondhand.
Yes.
But it's kind of interesting because there was so much faculty dissension, it seemed,
yes.
at that time.
It was.
With the management style and all that. You know, a lot of people that,
mm-hmm.
Barbara Teeters at the time was, you know, she had a job in the Metro East and a lot of people thought her head was in the Far East. You
yes.
know, she was an expert on China. So.
Uh-huh.
But now, I think my perception has changed because
mm-hmm.
as you get older, you realize, you know, running a university is a pretty complicated
yes.
job. And I'm sure Earl Lazarson, I almost never saw him on campus. Now, I'm not saying that
uh-huh.
I was on campus 24 hours a day watching
right.
out for him necessarily. But just as a student, I didn't really notice him milling about. And he was probably holed up in his office trying to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, your perception is, boy, they're not doing anything right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure since it was early on in his president, I don't know if it was, he was the president at the time or the chancellor.
He was the president
at that time.
Mm-hmm. Nancy Belf became
chancellor
again.
Okay. Well, I'm sure just like anyone who takes any job, there are some challenges where you look back in hindsight and you say, I wish I would have done this. And maybe there were some of those. But I think I think history helps to clarify how
yes.
effective people were. And if you look at it, I kind of look these things up just because these were my perceptions. But first of all, I believe there was a revolving door of presidents before Earl Lazarson, and I think he served for 14 years from 80
uh-huh.
to 94. And at the time he took over, enrollment was down 40% from a peak in 1970 of 13,000. So that's one big problem. The other big problem was there was less state funding over the time that he was the head. The percent of the general fund from the state declined from 13.6 in 1980 to 11.3 in subsequent years. I just brought this.
Yeah.
But if you look at it now, you know, he served for 14 years. Tuition to this day is still, for most people, affordable.
Yes.
Enrollment has definitely stabilized at the time he was done to about 11,800. And there were more buildings like the Vidal Bean Center, the Student Fitness Center, the Art and Design Building. So I think early on, it really looked bleak.
Yes.
He was having to cut budgets. And,
yes, he
and
was.
I'm sure people were up in arms about the way that it was cut. And maybe just because his personality varied from, say, John Rendleman's, you know, it made it even more difficult. But I think times change and you're
That's
able
right.
to look back in hindsight. And plus, I'm a little older and I can now see, God, I would never have that job. even if I was smart enough to have it. And if you look at the bottom line, I think he set the stage for the university being a little more stable and then also going on to hopefully bigger and better things in the future. So that's just my perception. And again, I've got to clarify the context. I don't have an intimate knowledge. I may have spoken to him once and very briefly, so it's not something where I'm some kind of insider. I was just a student. But at this point in time, and if you look at how things were done in the long run, I think it panned out,
yes.
fortunately.
Right. Well, do you have any, you've already talked about Bill Ward, and do you have any other special memories of fellow students or anything about your experiences?
Well, I do remember, you know, I was talking about that, how Earl Azarson, you know, at the time I was going, at least, he may become more popular later, but at the time, you know, he wasn't the most popular leader, I guess, but maybe that wasn't necessarily his aim. He was more worried about the costs. So anyhow, we had Edwin Newman came to speak, and the Lazarsons and the university very graciously invited several students from my program I was in, since Edwin Newman was in the business, to go over to the Lazarson House, which I think was on Charles or St. Charles Street by St. Louis.
Yes, that was the old president's house.
Okay, and I heard secondhand that the Lazarson, later on I heard secondhand the Lazarsons weren't allowed that house for certain reasons.
No.
But the funny thing, well, first of all, what I remember is that all of us students were really impressed by the fact that he had a heated driveway. That's what somebody told us. I don't know if that's true, but and then we were sitting there and they had, you know, a spread out for us, and I had a really big appetite at the time, and I had gone over like my fifth time, and by the fifth time Edwin Newman turns and he goes, "You really like to eat, don't you?" And I was so shocked that to hear something from a, you know, television god or something,
yes.
but I didn't know what to say, and I just laughed. But anyway, when going back to what you were saying, though, about your perceptions, you know, I think that, and I'm trying to stay big picture because there are certain memories I have, but that are not real of interest to the audience, you know, big audience, but I think the leadership subsequently, and history will be the ultimate judge, obviously. You know, I think David Warner was a good transition. You know, someone who had been a professor there for a long time, who knew the ropes, knew how to get things done.
Yes.
And I was really impressed as an alderman when he came and spoke to the city council. I know that, especially around the time that he became the chancellor, there was a good collaboration between the city of Edwardsville and SIU Edwardsville. I know in certain respects there was good collaboration in the past. I just don't think it was really publicized as much. You know, for example, Ben Dickman, the city administrator, a few weeks back was talking about a time when a tornado hit Edwardsville. And there was a lot of damage done. And I think he got, and that's something you may have to validate.
That was in the early 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah. And this may be something to validate with Ben, but I think Mr. Dickman was recalling everything that was going on and what a crisis it was. And he said that one of the things that helped the city a great deal was that Earl Lazarson offered whatever assistance, you know. And I don't think that's something that he would necessarily, I don't know him well, that's a context, but I'm not sure that necessarily that would wind up in the papers or anything to make him look good, but it's just a quiet form of leadership where he's helping the city in a crisis. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that collaboration necessarily wasn't there in the past, but from perception, you know, typically if you went to SIU, you go home on the weekends. Mm-hmm. They're just, the campus itself on the weekends, there wasn't much to do, or at least the perception was that there wasn't much to do, or else you'd go to the bars in Edwardsville, and the talk among students was they have a lot of townies at this bar. You call residents of Edwardsville townies, which I think is kind of condescending, but it was just kind of interesting because that was just the way it was back then, and I think it's changed quite a bit because I still go on the campus pretty regularly, and I think it's much more residential. I think they're with the next residence hall, there'll be up to 3,500 on campus.
That's right. That's what I heard the chancellor talk today, and that's what he said.
Oh, okay.
He said there'll be 3,500 living on campus.
Yeah, and when I look at, I pick up the Alesto from time to time, and I look at the back page where they have listings of events and stuff, and I'm really impressed, and I think it really, I don't know about Nancy Belk as much, but I know with David Warner there, I really started noticing more momentum where the university would have a welcome day in town, like a festival for the students, and the signs would be posted all around town. I'm sure the Chamber of Commerce was involved in that, but it's just nice to see a close bond. And I know that from observation, Mayor Niebuhr is really very collaborative as well. You know, it takes two. And so that's a good situation. And I can definitely say from an alderman's perspective, although I'm not sitting there wheeling and dealing like the mayor is directly with the chancellor, but it's just nice to see people, first of all, coming here to get an education, and then so many people who are employed here through SIU, so many people who, if they're not employed, do business with SIU, the amount of diversity in this population, the amount of education in this population that SIU provides. Mm-hmm. Other good things happening, for example, the Lewis and Clark.
Yes.
I know that a lot of that, Lewis and Clark deserves credit, but it emanated from SIU, at least their building. And is supported by SIU as well. So there's so many great things that have enhanced Edwardsville through the years. That the university provides, and I think it's really consistent with what Thomas Jefferson envisioned when he set up the first public university in with Virginia, you know. And I read something somewhere where he considered that one of his three greatest accomplishments in life.
Yes, what he wanted to have put on his tombstone.
Yes, exactly. And if you think about it, you know, I don't know if people at the time considered that a utopian goal, but we have the same thing in a certain respect right here in Edwardsville, and we have people coming to Edwardsville, I guess, in kind of in the same way I did, who wouldn't have known anything about Edwardsville to begin with, you know. And I know there are some people who probably, well, I know the guy who shot at the helicopter didn't want the university to be there, but I think it really makes a nice compliment to the town and enhances it, and I think it'll keep the property values and the education level of education and a level of diversity at a great level in the future, and that's a big reason why we live here. We love living in a town where there's a university.
Yeah. Okay. What field is your wife in?
She is in well, I guess you'd call it special education. I'll just tell you what she does, and you can label.
Okay.
You're the writer. She works in downtown St. Louis, and she's a manager at a nonprofit firm which helps people with disabilities to get jobs.
Oh, that's great.
And they contract with the state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
I give you the name of it, but they're out of
yes.
Springfield. Nobody
mm-hmm.
knows the alternative opportunities name.
Uh-huh.
But they help people with both physical and mental
mm-hmm.
disabilities. They provide job training and job placement
mm-hmm.
and job coaching, that sort
great.
Of thing. She's been in that kind of business for most of her career. Although she was a speech communication major
uh-huh.
at SIU Edwardsville. Well, actually, I think she got a master's in speech comm there.
Mm-hmm.
And we met at the SIU Foundation in that Tosofsky house.
Yes.
And it was funny because the head of, at the time, her name was Kate Chappell. This was back in 85.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, my wife, was working there for the summer. And I was the new guy, and Kate led me down the stairs, and everybody was introduced to me, and Sarah and I kind of clicked, and that's how we met. We would call alumni and ask for money. And it was interesting, though, because a lot of alumni just had a great attitude toward SIU.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice talking to them.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's interesting, too. Well, I asked what you see as turning points in the history of the university, and you spoke to the changes in the relationship between the city and the university. I suppose that's one major.
Yeah, the changes
shift.
That I know of, and I, you know,
uh-huh.
it's so long ago, and I wasn't even here, so I don't know. I have heard secondhand through city leaders that the relationship wasn't always.
Uh-huh. No, it wasn't.
Nearly as good as it was as it is now. You know, my impression, and a lot of this is based on what people like Bill Ward told me, was that, you know, when the university started up and then they got John Rendleman, you know, he was good at marketing the university, and he got that Mississippi River Festival going and all that, and that he was a bubbly, you know, glad-handing, charismatic president. And then he unfortunately died. And then they kind of went through a transition there, and then Earl Lazarson took over. And you know, Earl Lazarson is, in terms of personality, may have been exactly opposite. And certain people who love John Rendleman,
yes,
you know,
uh-huh.
and I know in our particular program of journalism that when John Rendleman was the head, our journalism budget was phenomenal. I mean, they
uh-huh.
we were producing glossy color
yes.
student publications, which is an extreme rarity in the field at that time. There was a color photography course, and that's very expensive. When you think about it, color photography in the 1970s,
mm-hmm.
oh. Extremely rare for a student program. And even when I graduated, I was told by some people, even people who went to Mizzou, that it was rare to have so many student lab publications, so we'd have clips to take into jobs to show what we were
sure.
doing. But the journalism was really, the budget was just slashed in the,
yes.
in the 80s, and I'm sure there was a lot of resentment because of that.
Uh-huh.
Was that the right thing to do? Well, it wasn't the right thing to do in the journalism professor's eyes,
mm-hmm.
but in the long run, you know, history
yes.
will be the judge as to whether that helped the university
right.
to survive in the long run. So it's two sides to the coin, as,
yes.
as always, you know.
Right.
But we, so I, you know, when I was going there, because I'd see these cutbacks and I'd hear about it, I kind of felt like, boy, I'm really coming here at the wrong
yes.
time. And that really wasn't the case, because it was good
mm-hmm.
good training. I was
yes.
at the Alestle paper and the WSIE radio station.
Did you work at the Alestle?
Yes.
What jobs did you, were you?
I mainly worked in sports. Now,
were you as the sports editor or sports writer?
I was like assistant sports editor. I think I may have even been the editor for a summer or the sports editor. I can't recall.
Uh-huh.
But most of my stories were on the minor sports like cross country and stuff. I did do some soccer and basketball. Lynn Lashbrook was the athletic director at the time, and
uh-huh.
the sports program really went through some interesting changes. In the late 70s, there was a big push to go Division I, and then that got squelched.
Yes.
I think a big a big reason that got squelched was this Ken Flack and Robert Seduso situation.
Yes.
And my, you know, Bill Ward always moaned and groaned about how Flack and Seduso could have brought more publicity to this university than anybody had we had a good relationship with them when they left, because they eventually went to Wimbledon. And, that got squelched. And then when I was there, now this was some direct, because I would interview Lynn Lashbrook. In his office, he would have a seating chart, season tickets and things, and you'd go to the basketball
yes.
games, and you'd see John Edwards or James Jaffa giving autographs to the kids. And
uh-huh.
They were starting to get some decent attendance
uh-huh.
for a Division II school. And I know when we played SIU Carbondale in basketball, that Vidal Bean Center was sold out, which is a
right.
rarity. And that just added to my perception of, wow, this place must be going downhill, because Lynn Lashbrook left after that.
Yes.
And you just kind of thought, boy, if you have some success, you want to get out of here or something. And that was probably not entirely fair, but that was, I'm just giving you my
uh-huh.
honest perception when I was 21
I
years old.
I think the perception of him now is that he was a guy on his way up, so this was a stepping stone for him.
Yeah.
He didn't ever intend to stay here.
Right.
So he was here, and he got his 4 years in, and then
yeah.
he moved up to another
but
level.
As a student, I just thought, I'm still here.
And then the guy that followed him really got the axe because of Seduso.
Yeah. So the sports program went through some interesting changes. Bob Gelker was a longtime successful soccer coach.
Uh-huh.
They brought in Ed Hunneke, and that, I think that program faced some challenges, because I think there was quite a track record before that, and it was a Division I program. But then I think because of the budget cuts that they faced, maybe some scholarship
uh-huh.
restrictions that always meant St. Louis U would mm-hmm. kill them in the bronze boot. You know, I mean, the bronze
yeah.
boot was not an even contest in the 1980s.
No.
So that kind of added to the student perception of, oh, it wasn't like it was back in the 70s. That,
yes.
That, you know, you'd go, you'd walk around campus and you'd see the furniture that was from when the campus started up
uh-huh.
and it stayed there forever. And then you go to the library and it seemed like all the books were from 1970, you know.
Uh-huh.
You just got the perception that the glory days were when this university, you know, was in the early 70s or something. And there, I'm sure there was, the funding level was better then.
Yes,
but
that
as
was
a student,
the key.
Yeah, as a student, you really didn't, you weren't cognizant of
uh-huh.
that. And I will fully admit, as a student, I was naive. I'm still naive to this day in certain ways, but at least I recognize that it was a lot more complicated than one thought back.
Did you ever cover women's athletics? Any?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they started
writer.
A volleyball team
uh-huh.
when I was there. I covered that a little bit. I definitely covered the women's side of cross country. I liked covering the minor sports because the athletes were a lot more appreciative of the coverage, whereas the athletes in the major sports kind of acted like they deserved it and they were hot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Plus, I was involved in minor sports. So.
Now, do you remember who was the editor of the Alesto when you were?
Yes. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because she is now an investigative reporter with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Her name is Carrie Tuft. She was on 60 Minutes when she broke a story in Belleville when she was with the Belleville News Democrat. And I think it was when the blacks were being harassed in the Signal Hill area by the cops.
Yes.
And Carrie, out of everyone in our class, I have a lot of respect for her, because she
uh-huh.
was just doggedly determined to
uh-huh.
you know, speak up for the little guy. And, you know, she,
yeah.
uh-huh. She now is with the Post-Dispatch, and is this book funded by the university or?
Well, I don't really have a contract. They said they were going to give me $5,000 when it was
okay.
finished,
yeah.
but I'm giving it back. I'm going to start some scholarships in history with
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, Carrie was there during the roughest time, which was around 84, 85, 86, for as far, you know, that was when.
Yeah,
Robert
I should
Peters
interview
was there.
Her. I did interview Pat Gowan.
That was
another interesting story.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have a degree, and he's one of the last successful.
Did he graduate like in 70 or something?
He
like
never
that?
Graduated.
Oh, that's what you're saying, yeah.
He worked and worked and then he got a job from a paper in Collinsville, and he worked there for 7 years, and then he told the editor he wanted to try the big time, so then he went over to the Globe.
Okay.
And then when the Globe folded, he was one of the ones picked up by the Post.
I think there was a story I loved in here that I think was done by Pat Gowan.
Uh-huh. Where did you get all that?
I was just getting on LexisNexis today.
Oh.
Where is it here?
And you just keyworded SIUE?
Here it is. This was a really nice feature that Gowan did on Earl Lazarson as he was retiring. And the great thing about this article that I loved was it just captured Lazarson's personality. And I can definitely say from a distance that it did, because he was not an extrovert, you know. And
yes.
And it's funny because it opened up by talking about how Earl Lazarson didn't have any books in his office, and Lazarson is quoted as saying, "I didn't come to work to read," or something like that.
Yes.
I'll give you all this.
Oh, sure, great.
It was just great. And then there was I do want to point out, I had also looked up David Warner's speech that he made during convocation in 1997, and at the very end, I was just reading through it, and,
uh-huh.
and I was just like right on, because it reflected my feelings
uh-huh.
too, where, you know, you're young and you think, oh, I'll go here and then I'll go to a better place.
Yes.
And you go there and by circumstance, and also by the fact that it appeals to you, it turns out 20, 30, 40 years later, this is the better place.
Yes.
And it was just a really nice anecdote. And I thought, you know, I don't know how much personally that I can give you that's useful, because a lot of the things I'm interested in are of no interest to the wide audience.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these things, I think, reflected big picture things at the leadership
yes.
level that would,
yes.
and I know that you already have a lot of this, but I just figured, well, I'm looking it up anyway, so I'll bring it.
Oh, that's nice. I'm glad you brought it.
I've
seen some of these things in the archives. Pat Gowan mentioned that interview with Earl Lazarson, and he gave me the date of the Post where it was.
Yeah.
You know, so I could.
So it's right here.
Yeah,
and,
great.
I'll look through my notes here, because Carrie Tuft.
Did you spell it? K-E-R-R-Y.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the informant. She goes by Carolyn Tuft now.
C-A-R-L-I-N-E.
Oh, well, C-A-R-O-L-Y-N, I think.
Y-N, okay,
and then it's
Carolyn.
T-U-F-T.
Yes, that's what I wrote, T-U-F-T.
And you can...
I haven't noticed her byline, but I don't always notice. Pat Gowan told me he's in charge of he has six people working for him, the crime.
Tell you what, Pat will put you in touch with him.
Okay.
I can if you want, it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
But I call her Carolyn, do you get the Post-Dispatch, I take it?
Oh, yes.
She just
faithfully.
Did this.
I read every word.
Well, she's an investigative reporter, uh-huh. so you don't always see her
no,
byline.
Uh-uh.
But she and a person over there just wrote this story about the Missouri State Department
yes.
of Mental Health.
Yes, I just didn't notice the byline
she
on
wrote that.
That.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's just a phenomenal investigative
uh-huh.
reporter. And she would really give, because she would definitely, she'd talk to the union, the AFSCME union representative, and then she'd
uh-huh.
go interview Barbara Teeters and stuff. So she was really in the
uh-huh.
thick of a lot of that stuff, and that was her beat. And I think she was the news editor of the Elestal at the time. So I think
okay.
that would definitely be a good person
yes,
to interview.
Yes, be a good person to interview.
You gotta be careful, though, because that's why I asked, is this book funded by the university? And
well,
I realized
I don't have
accurate.
A contract, so
okay.
I never know
yeah.
what's going to happen.
It'll probably be someone
it doesn't
one-sided.
Matter to me anymore.
But she's so nice, and it...
The book is going to be about memories,
okay.
is what it's going to be organized.
So
not promising
like
to be
yes,
a bureaucratic history.
Okay.
It's going to be vignettes, and it's going to be, you know, box quotations from people from their
whatever's
interviews.
Whatever's colorful.
Yes,
okay.
right.
I didn't know that.
Because,
I'm sorry.
Because I'll send you this. I'll transcribe it and send it to you at some time in the next couple
okay.
months. And then you'll go, it's your intellectual property. You'll go over it,
okay.
and you can change anything you want in it. And then I ask you to donate it to the library
okay.
for use by yeah. researchers. And then I could take a chunk out of it, you know.
Yeah.
And
that's kind of
yeah.
a neat oral history, what you're
yes,
saying.
Yes, and if people want to read through and see, oh, look what so-and-so said about such and such. They
yeah.
don't have to You know, that's kind of what I'm doing with it. Because I'm not very interested in bureaucratic reorganization, and except if it really shifted the university, but a lot of people didn't seem to.
Like, I'm getting on back to a subject I dealt with earlier, but the whole Earl Anderson thing, you know, when I talk about how he's introverted or whatever, I just remember at that Edwin Newman gathering in his house. You know, it just seemed like, well, first of all, your outlook on him is colored by what you're hearing from the professors.
From the professors.
So you're almost, you know, thinking that it's Emperor Hirohito or something,
yes.
You know, and and so first of all, you're a little nervous, but you're also kind of like, oh, is that him, you know, and he's not, you know, doesn't always have a big smile on his face. And so I think when I was standing there and watching, I was thinking, oh, it must be really painful for him to even say a word to anybody, you know. But if you think about it, you know, all these kids are like,
yes, right,
half,
it must
less
have been
than
really
half his age,
great.
And it must
yeah.
be awkward to,
uh-huh.
so I think I empathize a lot more now with what someone goes through who, I guess he was originally, what, a math teacher?
Yes.
And so being president is probably not what he originally was looking to do, and so I think it's just history really clarifies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure there were maybe some problems, but I think all in all it turned
yes.
out well.
Right. Well, I asked, have you been active in alumni affairs? And
I usually just send my donation. There was
okay.
a time in the early 90s where I was involved with a mass communications alumni group.
Mm-hmm.
That group still continues.
Do you know Patrick Murphy?
I know of him.
Yeah.
And I think I may have talked to him briefly, but I don't know him personally.
Well, you might like him. He lives here in Edwardsville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He lives in the house right next to the very old city park that has a few old gravestones in it, and that's all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, on Randall or one of those.
Yeah, Randall, one of those.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, the problem that at that time was that the journalism, well, it may have been, I think it was the whole mass comm program, lost its accreditation.
Yes.
And one of the reasons it lost it was that the
journalism.
Yeah, the accreditors felt that there was more of a, there needed to be more liberal arts requirements, I think.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, and again, I'm
it's accredited again now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was a difference. There was definitely a difference in philosophy between Bill Ward and those accreditors.
Yes.
I mean, he truly believed that journalism, in a way, was the liberal arts because
mm-hmm.
you're interviewing people from different disciplines and you're learning. So, and he truly felt that to be professionally competent,
mm-hmm.
you needed to learn the skills of photography,
mm-hmm.
the skills of layout and design.
Yeah.
How to write as a journalist rather than just simply your formal English composition.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I would say he's definitely correct.
Mm-hmm.
I have found that to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certain marks of a pro that you have to pick up before you graduate or else
right.
you're going to learn the hard way later on.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a division there that eventually got healed, but I think he was also concerned about journalism, the budget going downhill, the emphasis being more on television, radio, and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I stepped down from doing that. There was some board or something in the early 90s. It was a pretty informal group.
Yes.
But, you know, really, my family and I, we like to go to the outdoor pool. We like to use
yes.
the fitness center. We go to Arts and Issues from time to time. I hope that when I retire, I can take classes from SIU
yes.
just for fun. You know,
yes.
I, as a student, I would have thought I had never said that. So I'm sick of school. But
yeah.
It has a lot to offer.
Well, are there any other topics
yes.
that you want to talk about?
There's actually someone.
Let me just check the.
Yeah.
Okay,
there's actually someone see. Somewhat famous that we went to school with named Kathleen Madigan, who's a comedian. She has been on Jay Leno a bunch of times. She was on, I think it's called Last Comic Standing or something like that.
Mm.
And she entertains from city to city in clubs. She'll be in St. Louis, I think, July 13th. She was a journalism major And she came from the same area I did in Florissant.
Oh, really?
She lived, I didn't know her in high school, but she lived, it turns out, just a couple blocks away. And I went to her house one time to watch a prize fight or something with a group after she had graduated. I had lost touch with her. I hadn't been in touch with her, but I know her, I believe it's her cousin. And if you want, I can put you in touch with her as far as how to get a hold of her.
Sure. And she graduated here in journalism also?
Yes, at the same time I graduated. And, you know, she was kind of funny at the time. We all thought she had a good sense of humor.
Yes.
And she was nice. And I liked her. But nobody would have ever thought Kathleen Madigan would be this, you know, famous comedian. She's on, you know, when I turn on the radio and there's a syndicated show out of Indianapolis, I've heard her a few times on that. And I have not since seen her perform. I'd like to eventually. We just, there are a couple times where we tried and it turned out the date wasn't good. But the thing about it is, it'd be nice just to see Kathleen, not because she's famous, but just because it's nice to see an old face. You like to hear about your fellow graduates doing well and talk about old times. So the celebrity thing, it's nice that she's a celebrity, but to me it's really not that important. The important thing is she was a nice friend when I went to school.
Right.
And I think she used to wait tables at Casa Gallardo or something. She smoked like a chimney. And she uses her smoking in her routine a lot. I don't know if she ever really adds much as far as her journalism in her jokes. I do remember she got a job at the Missouri Athletic Club on their PR staff, or maybe it was an internship. But she has jokes about the naked men who'd be swimming there and stuff like that. So it'd be entertaining, an entertaining part of the book.
Right.
And she, I can...
Okay,
I can,
good.
Through my contact that's like her cousin, I can get you her direct
number. I'd like to interview her when she comes here. If she's going to be here.
She goes back to, I think she has a house in like De Pere or something. But I think her relatives might still be in North County unless they're like everyone else. Story with probably the last person, if you were in administration, she'd be the last person you want on that campus. But I'm trying to think what else. I just, when I was on vacation, I looked at your questions and tried to scribble some notes that would be reminders. You know, I do have to say that the recent development where we have, what was it, 6,000 applications and only so much accepted is kind of out of this world when you think about it.
Yes.
Especially during those trying times of the 80s. So I think it just underscores further that history, you know, you cannot, it's hard to judge how well that administration did over those years that Earl Lazarson was there until you have time to kind of clear the focus.
Yes.
As far as the new leadership, I've been really impressed with it at this point. Very aggressive. The marketing, and I'm in kind of the communications marketing business, the marketing of the university has really been better than I have ever remembered.
Good.
I've been impressed with the ad campaign as far as the SIU excellence. The E always stands for something. And here's a little anecdote. I am not tight with the chancellor or anything like that. I'm just an alderman, and I was at the it's that run walk that the university has downtown. I think it was about a month ago.
It's for students with disabilities.
Yes. Thank you. And Ellen, he was there that morning, and first of all, I felt really guilty because he had on his SIU Edwardsville hat. and his run walk shirt on, and I had received my run walk shirt, and I wear it. But that day,
I didn't. I just put it back in the car.
Uh-huh.
And I had on a Tennessee hat. So here I am wearing a hat. And my relative, my wife's side of the family, lives in Knoxville.
Okay.
So here I am talking to the head of the university, and I don't have on any SIU Edwardsville stuff. So, and I didn't realize that until afterward. You know, here he is talking to me, wondering. And he did say something like, "Where's your shirt?" And I left it in the car. But anyhow, the point I'm getting to is I complimented him. I said, mm-hmm. "That's a really nice ad campaign that is being done, and I just wanted to let you know that it's refreshing to see that because
uh-huh.
the university in the past, I was never really that impressed
uh-huh.
with what little advertising there was." And it was interesting because he said, and I'm paraphrasing here because it's been a while, but he said that at first they were going to go with this quirky-looking E.
Uh-huh.
And he looked at it, and he looked at it, and I guess over the weekend or something, he finally looked at it, and he thought, no, we're going to go with a big, bold E, you know? and I think maybe that reflects his personality, because
uh-huh.
I distinctly remember going to one of these Edwardsville and University
yes.
welcome
events
in town
yes.
when he first started. And the thing that amazed me was he was out there chatting up a storm with the students.
Uh-huh.
And I was so used, from my time of
yes.
the president, you know, getting the job done in the office. Not that there's anything wrong with
Even
that.
Even David Warner, I think, did it pretty much in the office.
Yeah, so. I mean, they had different styles.
Yes, very
once,
different.
It doesn't mean one style's wrong and one style's right, but I was.
Mm-hmm.
It was just nice to see
mm-hmm.
How he was getting along with the students. And I have been impressed by how aggressive he's been to this point. Again, we won't know until years from now how effective he is.
Right.
But I've been impressed so far with what I've seen.
That's right.
And the advertising, I think. Hey, and if I was the one who hatched that ad campaign, you look at the amount of demand that university's having now, I don't know if there's a way you can, maybe through web hits or something, prove the correlation between the ad campaign
uh-huh.
and the subsequent extreme interest in enrolling
yes.
in SIU, but even if you can't prove it, it's a great development for the university. The only thing I hope in the future is that the university, there's so many kids who went there from the parents who were in the steel mills or parents who were farming,
yes.
who were the first kids in college. You know, we have speakers come back
mm-hmm.
who were graduates and address us and tell us about their experiences
yes.
when they were at the university in the early 70s. I just hope the university doesn't lose that component where, you know, it's accessible, it's affordable.
Right.
I'm just hoping that remains, that it doesn't become, I don't want it to become Wash U.
Right.
You know, I like the role that SIU has. It's really helped the area.
Well, I'll turn it.
I'm trying to see through my notes if there was anything that I forgot as far as, you know, looking at your questions
uh-huh.
I think
I always wondered, I guess I can't put this on the tape either. I always wondered.
You know, in any field you have people who you want to emulate. Like,
mm-hmm.
at the time I was going, all the people who were interested in sports broadcasting wanted to be just like Zip or Zeppo, you know. and you need to, like Camille said, be your own man. And
uh-huh.
through time, you know, it's nice to pick up certain things, but you have to make sure they're journalistically solid. And that was
mm-hmm.
that was how I benefited from him.
Mm-hmm.
How I hope I benefited from it.
Yeah.
I think I did.
Yeah. Well, it's been really interesting to talk with you.
Oh, same here.
Active citizen. And
yeah, I'm glad that this is just some vignettes, because I was a little worried that, boy, I don't have much here that's
Oh, no.
That's
what
general.
I want, is how you remember it and just your whole general thinking about it. And I really haven't heard very much about the Mass Comm program. I heard about it from Frank Akers.
Oh, yeah.
He was a student earlier, and that was a great interview with him.
Yeah, I met him a few times, and he's definitely,
He was a speech writer for people, so.
Yeah. Now, the radio, the WSIE radio station underwent a pretty dramatic change when I was there. Fred Criminger was the longtime general manager, And the station had no format. In a way, that was good because the students got a lot of hands-on experience. There wasn't a whole lot of guidance at the time I was there. It was kind of like the Alestel. The Alestel was a journalism lab publication at one time.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I was there, you had a faculty advisor.
Yes.
But that faculty advisor at the time was kind of hands-off, so it wasn't like you were being critiqued that much. So on one hand, you were getting out there and doing things on your own and through repetition, hopefully picking things up. On the other, there wasn't a whole lot of supervision professionally. So that was a little bit of a liability. WSIE, I think in 1986 it might have been, then the general manager changed from Fred Criminger to Roy Gerritsen. And that's when the station format changed from just a mishmash of, they called it the station with variety, whatever that means. And then it changed to a jazz format. And it sounded much more professional. It's hard for me to say that that necessarily meant less hands-on experience for the students because I wasn't there after it changed. That's around the time I graduated.
Right.
But what I do remember when Roy Gerritsen was first introduced, he was, you know, he definitely knew his music. He knew our generation, you know. He talked about the, pardon the language, the Butthole Surfers, you know, and that really warmed everybody up because that was a popular group at the time. And he knew, you know, if you listen to the station after he took over, it was definitely, it sounded much more professional than our mishmash of, you know. He clearly said, you don't say W, you say W. So there was probably a more professional guidance at the time. And I think they eventually even brought in some, you know, the man in the red vest.
Yes.
Some people who were in the business to work at the station.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little bit of a controversy then because there was less play-by-play. I mean, we used to broadcast Cougar baseball and spend 6 hours doing a doubleheader. And we kind of, I think we lost that. And whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, it's hard for me to say.
Well, I think they're going to start broadcasting the basketball games again.
Yeah.
And Frank was saying they do the St. Louis Blues hockey.
Yeah. And I did some, I did, you know, the basketball, I did some play by play and covering the baseball, and I was awful. Just terrible at it. But it was,
good to try. I mean,
there were people like Dwayne Statz, who worked at, I believe he did broadcast for WSIE. He went on to broadcast for the Yankees and the Cubs. And I think there were maybe some other people who went on to bigger and better things, but it's been so long. I just remember Dwayne Statz was the one biggie who did play-by-play on WSIE, and then he wound up in the big time. I think, in our journalism program, probably the biggest name is Bill Plaschke. He won like a National Sports Writer of the Year award.
Is it P-L-E-S?
P-L-A-S-H-K-E, I believe.
Okay.
I have talked to him a few times. We had kind of reunions for Bill Ward once or twice. And
that's nice.
Yeah, and Bill Plaschke has been with the L.A., I think he's with the L.A. Times, and he's been there a long time. I have seen his stuff published in the Post-Dispatch before, although they don't carry him in syndication or anything, but he's on TV, and he's definitely a national name in sports writing, so he probably might be a good, of all people in journalism, other than our investigative reporter and our comedian, he would be the only other one that would come in mind.
Okay.
That would be good for the
book. Oh, good.
The TV radio side, I just can't think of as much because I kind of lost touch with that once I went over to journalism, I guess. And the journalism program was much smaller. I mean, I think we had a total over the entire time Bill Ward was there since like 1971, we had maybe a couple hundred. And so the neat thing about that intimacy was that by the time you graduated, you had already heard all these stories from Bill Ward about you know, Bill Miller with Anheuser-Busch and what was his name? You know, so-and-so with Ralston Purina. And you hear all these names, and you go out to the field, mm-hmm. and you run into them, and you'd be able to say, "Hey, I know I had Bill Ward, and I know all your stories, yes. and all that," and you'd relate to them very easily. I know Bill Plaschke, when he was a student, he did features on Minnesota Fats. He was one of the first to do a feature on Jackie Joyner Kersee when she was at the high school.
Uh-huh.
Level. And I remember seeing those clips when I went.
Mm-hmm.
So he would definitely be.
So this is so interesting to me that you really were entering into a strong professional program.
But it was very
with
small.
With lots of the ones that had lots of connections and
yeah,
lots of successful graduates.
And Bill Ward, even in the later stages of his time there, we didn't have the quantity and quality
mm-hmm.
of. You know, if you looked at the entire journalism class,
mm-hmm.
we didn't have the level that he had earlier on.
Uh huh.
But he always said, if you looked at your, you know, say top 10, he had just as strong a top 10 as he ever had, even in the early days.
Uh huh.
And they had a lot of, it was a powerhouse program. He always entered this William Randolph Hearst competition.
Yes.
And you'd see, you know, Indiana, Missouri, SIU Edwardsville, you know, so
yes.
He had a lot of pride in that.
Right, you won a lot of awards.
Yeah, but he, like I said, he was a little eccentric, and he definitely, with administration, not only the administration of Mass Comm, but the administration of the school, I know
uh-huh.
that he called it as he'd see it, and that probably wasn't appreciated a lot
no.
of times.
Yep. Well, that's faculty. Sometimes they're
yeah.
just great faculty, no
yeah.
two.
But it probably, you know, a more legislative leadership style versus a corporate leadership style
mm-hmm.
is probably more appropriate in a university environment. You know,
yes.
Professors want to give input. They're experts in their field. And
mm-hmm.
maybe they don't know how to run a university,
no.
but they can definitely give their 2 cents worth from their end. And,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know, you know, I'm in a hospital. I don't know the setup with the deans and all that bureaucracy and stuff, so.
Well, I'm really interested in leadership.
Oh,
in the mystery of leadership. So.
Same here. It's very, there's so many books on it.
Yeah.
And it's so highly visible that that's what we all talk about.
Yeah.
I'm just grateful that SIU has turned out to be a good place still. You know, we
yes,
have fond memories
yes.
of it. And there's that kind of bitter side where you think, boy, I'm here at the wrong time. But
yeah.
things
Turned
happen
out you
for
weren't.
A reason. Yeah.
Really.
So.
Because you were you.
Yeah. yeah. Best friend is Ariman, which is testament to the
nice.
Diversity. You know, it's great.
Oh, that's good.
You see uh-huh. people who are, you know, Asian, Indian.
Uh-huh.
It's something that wouldn't
uh-huh.
be here if it weren't for the university, as
right.
far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, if you look at us nationwide, one of the reasons the economy has always done so well is we keep having immigrants coming in who want to learn the skills, and everyone knows the immigrants have a great work ethic, I mean, for the most part.
You bet.
And I think it aids Edwardsville as well to have people coming in, learning those skills, and getting their master's and bachelor's degrees, and then, true, a lot of them go elsewhere, but we have a lot of brain power in Edwardsville, thanks to that. And I'm sure our population boom is due in part to the university. So many people moving
mm-hmm.
here who went to the university.
Mm-hmm.
So it's had quite a big impact on
mm-hmm.
on Edwardsville. I know in 80... when I came here, I think the population was probably around 11,000 or 13,000 in Edwardsville.
Yes, it was under 11,000. I think it was 11,000 in the census of 1990.
Yes, and we know now that we're looking at another census, and it's probably going to be around 25,000.
Yes.
Glen Carbon's the same way. Their population
uh-huh.
is roughly doubled, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at, you know, the housing values that have been going up,
yes.
I think that has a lot to do with it. And now we see an advertisement in the newspaper about housing for students. You know, SIU Edwardsville put out this big
yes,
ad.
He mentioned that today.
Yeah.
He mentioned that he needed
rental kind of
housing.
Crisis.
Yes, I think it is.
I've got a niece right now who wants to go to SIU Edwardsville for nursing,
mm-hmm.
and she's going to room with two of her friends, and she called me saying, I've been looking on the internet for renting
uh-huh.
a place, and it's very hard right now to find a good place to rent. And she said the prices are getting pretty high.
Yeah, well, they've built all these apartments south of the campus. And are those in Edwardsville or Glen Carbon?
Those are in Glen Carbon.
Okay. Because I'm about the Cherry Hills apartments, I've seen big...
on 157 you're talking about?
Yeah.
Those are in Edwardsville.
Those are in Edwardsville?
I thought you were talking about the ones that are south of 270.
No, the ones I was talking about, the ones just south of the campus
on
157. Because I've seen some big signs about Cherry Hills. Don't rent in Cherry Hills. They won't fix anything. And,
oh, really?
Yes. And I don't know. I think there's some issues.
Cherry Hills on the.
It's behind Shenanigans.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I have to look into that.
Oh well, maybe it's been looked into. It probably has. Because
yeah.
I think when I saw those was like in the early summer.
Oh, okay.
I saw a poster.
Well, you've got quite an interesting project, Ellen.
Yeah.
It's just.
I'm excited about it. I.